Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
I get up and I work, and I try to hang out with my family at night, and I try to hang out with my wife after the kid goes to bed, and then I go to sleep, and then I get up and I do it again. It's like, man, is that really that inspiring of an existence? Welcome to The Crunch, the only podcast that talks about how difficult it is to be a young Catholic male in today's modern society. It's your boy, Ethan.
And I'm Patrick. The Crunch is a podcast where me and Ethan, two Catholic fellas who've been friends for about 7 years, sit down and talk about a Catholic topic and goof off. It's mostly about the goofing off. So if you're afraid you're going to learn, don't worry. It's mostly about the goofing off. We think more people should have conversations like this, and we're glad you're here. Ethan, how are you?
Patrick, it's so hard to be a Catholic today.
We should talk about how hard it is to be Catholic in today's modern world.
Can we talk, but also with like a touch of humor with it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's talk about like the daily challenges of faith and how we overcome them.
I loved the post you made the other day where it was like me explaining to a first century saint of why the music was bad at church. He was killed for being Christian.
Yeah. I did think I liked that one. It was funny.
I was talking to my friend Daniel today. Shout out Daniel. You know him. He was in the wedding.
Yes.
But it was like 4 years ago. So who
knows? I miss that guy. We had a good conversation. So I had too many beers, and he was like, why should I be Catholic? And I was like, you should do it because it's a good time.
It's a good time, man.
It's a good time.
They cannot be Baptist. They cannot do this. They cannot drink the beers at the wedding.
Yeah. Because one day you die, man. You don't know where you go. But with Catholic, you know where you go.
Exactly. I did all of the things that assure my place in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I paid all of the dues, so I don't have to spend time in purgatory.
I did so many works to achieve salvation.
Earn my salvation.
And you too can earn these works in salvation together with me now.
The indulgence salesman bit is pretty funny. It's one of the funnier things that I've come up with. It's like, you know, I'm straight commission. I get 30% commission on all the indulgences I sell.
Yes. I go to super luxury heaven, and you get to go to normal middle class suburban heaven.
Yeah. I get to go to heaven where the seat lays all the way back.
Uh-huh.
You know?
I get to go to heaven where is an automatic moon roof in the whip.
In the whip.
It's just G-Wagons up there.
It's just G-Wagons.
You're going to be in Corolla heaven.
G stands for God.
You're going to be in Corolla heaven, and I'm going to be in God wagon heaven, and that's too bad for you.
G-Wagon heaven is an OG Crunch episode title.
That is true, man.
Yeah,
we used to be so cool and fun, and now we're old and
annoying
and incels.
So I was talking, to my my good friend Daniel about, and he did used to do music at the church, and I was like, I was complaining. I was like, look, I get it. We're playing Table of Plenty, but I was like, who is it for? And he's like, Patrick, you don't understand. Old people come up to me and ask me, why haven't we done Be Not Afraid in so long? Why have we not sung Rain Down at Mass recently?
I'm like, rain wow. down.
Wow.
Rain down.
The people who turn you up because you're too quiet just got their butt, just got their eardrums blown
just
in.
Just so much red on the monitor. Please stop.
Oh man,
that's a good one.
Should I turn my gain down? Is that what's needed? I know that was
probably
that was
if you haven't yeah. if you haven't turned your game down in a while, now might be a good chance to do it.
If or forever hold your peace.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
turning your game down is like cleaning out your Keurig.
Gain down.
Wow.
Yeah, there it is.
Wow.
Gain down.
It's not every day we get a joke from you.
How dare you? I had some good ones on last week's dating corner. People,
did you?
People talked about when some people were still talking about my LinkedIn mom joke.
What did you say?
I was like, is she bad? The reason why that's funny is because people don't expect that from me. They expect that
right,
from you.
Right. They expect me to be the guy that flirts with older women from my because yes. of my past, because of my history.
My people don't expect those things from me because of my past of being a big nerd.
One time I was at a wedding. I was at a wedding and I was, I think, 22. And I was flirting with a woman who was 30. And I did not know.
Good for you,
that
man.
She was 30. And then when someone told me that she was 30, I was like, man, it was a crazy time. It's like a wild, it's like all of the alcohol leaves your system when you realize you've been flirting with someone that's 30 when you're 22. You're like,
oh yeah,
dang.
Most definitely.
She was great though. I mean, it was no issues at all, but yeah. I definitely was not expecting that.
Absolutely. I wonder how many people were in that position at YCP. Mm-hmm. Like, that person is
35.
Someone was like, we should have, you know, they should have little lit name plates that like tell
say
people how old they are. And yeah. I was like, no, definitely not. Ask. Mm-mm. If
yeah.
you care.
Do you know exactly half of the
later.
People there would wear them? Do you know which half?
The 20-year-olds.
No, the men.
Oh,
women
yeah.
are going to put on a name tag willingly that says
oh,
their
that's,
age.
That's a good point. I don't. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't. I don't know any women that are younger than, I'll say 27, that mm-hmm. care to mention their age.
What do you mean?
Like, no,
like, so are
no
you saying
woman,
26-year-old women are walking around being like, I'm 26, la, la, la.
Yeah, oh, yeah, super, yeah.
Time to buy a purse.
Yeah, I think that's
what I don't know what women. Girls do in their free time.
Our wives are in the late 20s. I think our wives would tell someone, it's not weird to ask, it's not weird for a girl who's in her 20s to say mm-hmm. how old she is. Yeah. I don't know, like, a 27-year-old girl that's, like, lying about her age and saying she's 25. You know,
right.
That might happen on television because they make mm-hmm. a big joke about how women shouldn't be old.
Oh yeah,
women shouldn't
turn
be
into
old.
A crone.
Women should get old. You're in the crone zone. 27 and up, you're in the crone zone. You're.
We've already done the crone zone. I'm at the point where I've accepted my fate as an aging man that I've just been telling people that I'm 28. Like someone asked me the other day how old I am. I was like, I'm 28. My birthday's in June. I've got
late
some time.
20s.
Yeah. I mean, late 20s, it's all the same, but it's like, I'm going to be 28 this year. So as soon as it was 2024, I'm like, I'm 28, which sucks because 27, that means every year that you are is basically you only get 6 months being that age before you just start becoming the next age, which is just really sad.
Incorrect.
That's why as you get older, life moves faster is because you only live half a year at a time.
This is Ethan. Ethan is describing an interesting paradox that I've noticed where I don't know if this happens to you, but for me, 3:45 is 3:45. 3:47 is 4 p.m.
4 o'clock.
You know what I mean? What's your threshold? Is like 48?
For what, the end of the workday?
No. I'm saying If you're looking at the clock and you're like, oh, it's 3:45. I have a meeting at 4 o'clock. I have five minutes. Oh, it's 3:47. I'm late for this meeting. It's already 4 o'clock.
Yeah, it's probably like 3:20 for me.
You're like 3:20 is fine.
I'm a big rounder. Like right now, I'm looking at the clock. It's 7:55. It might as well be 8:30.
You round to the half hour?
I round
2 half hours in advance. I don't.
Because here's the thing. I'm preventing myself from pain, right? If I accept that I'm 28 now, then when I turn 28, it's like I've been 28 for 6 months. Nothing you can say can hurt me or delight me, right? I've neutralized this event, right? And so I'm afraid of 8:30 coming. 8:30 is nighttime. I don't want 8:30 to come. But if I accept that 8:30 is now, which I do, it's 7:56, then when 8:30 is here, it's like, oh, it's been 8:30 for half an hour already. Do you know what I'm saying?
No. These are like, there are thoughts that go through every man's brain that if he articulated it, people would be like, that's ridiculous. Right.
No, this is like, why they used to have, this is what the American Legion was for, is so that guys could get together and be like, how early do you accept that it's the next time?
Yeah.
And then they would do knitting and stuff. And it was great.
How much of yourself do you wash in the shower, and how much does like just the water take care of?
If I'm being honest, it's like it's the Pareto principle.
I wash 20% of my body.
But that gives 80% of the results. If I wash 20% of my body, then I get everything smelly, clean,
stink. Yeah.
And I take care of my visible situation, and the rest of it, fine.
Fun.
Doesn't matter because it's only worth 20%.
I learned this very early in middle school is you got, this is you, the feet, you got to wash the feet. You got to wash the feet. It's very important. If you're any young bucks out there that are, your feet probably stink and you got to wash them. You're standing in a puddle. That's true. And there's soap in the puddle. It's not scrubbing. You got to scrub. It's very important. This is a man podcast now. All the women are tuned out. They're
ladies,
like, this is disgusting.
Turn it off. I'm going to talk about my feet for a moment, please. When I was in college, I didn't wear flip-flops in the dormitory shower.
Bro.
And I need to tell everyone that right now. Because I just didn't. The work, in my mind, when I was 18, the work that it took to get the sandals on, wear them to the bathroom, take them off, get into the shower, get out of the shower, put the sandals back on, wear them back to my room, and then take them off was too much. The threshold was too high when I could just walk to the shower with no shoes, clean my feet in the shower, right? Like if I'm going to get fungus, I'm going to clean it right back off, right? Like it can't get me. Like I said, neutralize, right? Neutralize. I'm always looking ahead. To try and cut off evil at the pass.
Well, here's where the breaking point for me was. This was the breaking point for me. I'm walking around barefoot. Sure. If it's the middle of the night, I'm not putting on my shower shoes to go to the bathroom. No. All the dudes are walking around barefoot on the bathroom. Oh, all of a sudden in the shower, I have to wear magical sandals. No, I'm not doing that. For my first couple of years, I did. But afterwards, I was like, they clean these things every other day.
Right.
How many dudes have actually showered in this specific shower since they last cleaned it? Maybe four. It wasn't a very big dorm. You know, there was, you know, it's, I was like, who are we doing this for?
You made it a couple. I made it probably the first 2 weeks before I was like, done with this. Ridiculous.
Absolutely.
It was a weird experience because our dorm was like a male floor, female floor, floor. And I was on a male floor, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so there was always a slight risk that a woman could enter. And so it was always like a gamble to like walk down the hallway shirtless. Cause I didn't want a lady to see me because I looked like a runaway ream of paper.
Before I showered, I looked like a Dickensian child. Running around.
And then after I showered, I looked like a Dickensian child, but at the end of the book when he finds someone to take care of him and clean him. That's what I look like David Copperfield, but like after he finds his aunt, you know?
Yeah. Never read it.
You ever read David Copperfield? That's not a great yet. Book.
I'll read it one day.
No, it's good. He falls in love with the lady. And then it turns out that his incel female friend is the one he should be with the whole time because the girl he falls in love with freaking dies.
Dude, that's a sure way to know that you're not, it's not meant to be, bro.
I know.
That's going to be on our dating quarter. Like, hey, I was in love with this girl and then she died. What should I do?
I was in love with this frail, small little thing who feminized me. And then I realized once she was dead that I had to become a man. And so then I married this other girl that I've been close with and loved my whole life, but haven't married for some reason because I'm David Copperfield now.
Dude, David Copperfield is every guy.
Yeah. Can I make a confession to you?
Sure.
I took your advice.
What advice?
I started reading the second Mistborn book in the Brandon Sanderson.
How is it?
You're right. It's good.
I know. Myself. Isn't it good?
Yeah.
I did see someone on TikTok. So I started reading Stormlight Archive, which is his
book. Oh, I'm so excited to read that.
Dude, it's awesome. Like I finished the first book. It was great. It took me a month. Like seriously, a month.
That's a long time for you.
Pretty dedicated reading. Yeah. Like usually books don't take me a month.
Is it because it was long or is it because you're maybe slightly stupid?
It was long. I also didn't do any audiobook. I was like, I'm just gonna read it,
right?
Because
right.
I'm just gonna read it straight through. But it was great. I'm reading the second one, but I did watch some. I really liked the characters. I thought they were deep. I thought they were well written and had motives that were not like transparent. I watched a TikTok that was like, what is the Stormlight Archive about? And say cuts to someone. He's like, people with depression, people with depression and anxiety, people with dreams. And I was like, you're making it sound lame. Shut up.
You can have a book about yourself. You can just write a book if you want a book that's about you. Okay.
I was so upset. I was like, it's not a.
It's about magic. It's about swords.
It's about swords and it's about magic and it's about people and it's about the characters using the magic and it's cool. And I'm like, please don't make these characters flat. That's the thing is maybe we could talk about this.
Yeah.
Maybe we could talk about mental illness. I don't know if we can talk
about
it.
What a hot topic. That is, psychology is number 4 on the 75 podcast ideas and topics. So, right after celebrity interviews, DIY tutorials, and technology.
Dude, that is an AI generated article. All right.
It's from Buzzsprout. It's from our old stomping ground.
I'm sure it's AI generated. I'm positive.
Choosing the right topic for your new podcast is foundational to your show's success. If you're passionate and curious about your topic, you're more likely to attract loyal listeners and stay motivated to create consistent content. In this article, we share dozens of unique... That's so funny. Unique podcast topic ideas. Number 3, technology.
That's just if you scroll through the...
Number 5, product. Hold on, ready for this? Number 13. We could do this. Host-led workouts.
No, thank you.
Number 15, technology reviews. We could do book recommendations or critiques, which is what we're about to do.
Yes, okay.
Local news.
Oh. Shish.
Anyway. Sorry.
It's a pet peeve of mine.
Tell me your pet peeve.
I, Patrick Nevy, during the
storm
year
chasing. All right, I'm done.
That's a pretty interesting podcast topic. Is that one of the 75?
There was a tornado that almost hit my house the other day. I think we should do a live podcast from one of those big storm chaser vehicles. Yeah, we're heading straight for the cyclone.
It's very windy. As you can see, the tornado is coming.
Welcome to The Crunch, the only podcast live from an EF5 tornado.
Welcome to The Crunch, the only podcast live from the wonderful land of Oz.
I think it'd be great if we did a podcast, but it was like this.
This is a little comedy for those of you on the YouTube.
For those of you who are on the visual component. anybody who's on the audio could hear it too, because your chair was just freaking off.
So loud, dude. Oh, I need to get a new chair.
Patrick,
the JDFMCP.
During the year 2020, right after the COVID pandemic hit, I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety. So great time to be diagnosed with something such as this.
I think a little coincidence, maybe.
No, it was when we were talking about it, I was like, I'm going to leave all of the last couple of weeks out of it, and we're just going to go prior. And she's like, okay.
Right.
And so I'm a generalized generalized anxious person, right?
I don't want to interrupt you, but yeah. I do want to say real quick that COVID was like the gold rush, but for terrible therapists.
It was. I had a really good therapist, though. I had a really good therapist. Good. I had a really good. Yeah, I've gone to therapy multiple times. Most of them were bad. This therapist was great. She actually challenged me on some things.
Ah.
One time I was talking about my
I would fire her immediately.
One time I was talking about like a relationship with a family member of mine, and she asked me after I said that, she's like, "Is that consistent with the way that is that like consistent with your worldview?" And I was like, "Absolutely not." I know. I was like, that's a pretty interesting way to put it. But anyway, I want to say this as a point. I'm not coming at this from someone who hates therapy and doesn't believe that mental illnesses are real. However, I do think that media in general tends to, you know, just use that as like a trump card to be like, oh, this character is deep because they have depression. You know, this character is deep because they have anxiety. It's almost like the opposite of Deus Ex Machina, where it's like the solution right. comes out of nowhere. It's like the problem comes out of nowhere.
Oh,
it's not a
that's
real
interesting.
Problem. You know?
What's the... Hold on.
It's the problem in the machine.
Hold on. Hold on.
Okay.
It's the... Instead of the Deus Ex Machina, it's the Diaboli Ex Machina.
There you go. It's the devil from the machine.
I've inverted the common phrase.
Yes. I think that's what people expect is going to happen in things like Stormlight. They're like, oh, this person is acting this way because they're anxious. So no, right. This character is motivated by her family, motivated by her own desire to avoid the crimes that she's committed, you know, and like these things are revealed over time. And it's too simple to be like, ah, yes, this character has anxiety or this character has depression. And I think that the reason why people create media that's like this, or the reason why people analyze media in this way, is because that's how they view all of their actions. I do this because I am anxious. I do this because I have depression. And I think at a certain point, I was kicking this around. This maybe is more personal.
That's fine. Feels like that kind of vibe.
Yeah. I was talking to my priest friend yesterday, and he was like, yeah, if you have any anxiety, that just means you don't trust God. Like, the extent to which you have anxiety, it means you don't trust God. Like, it doesn't matter if it's clinical or not. And I was like, yeah, that's probably true. You know, it's like at the end of the day, it's like, okay, it doesn't matter if you have an addiction to something. It's like, okay, well, you're mm-hmm. still sinning. Doesn't matter right. If you're chemically compulsed to do drugs. It's like, well, you're still sinning. You might not be culpable for it, but it's still a lack, and you want to mm-hmm. not have that lack. And so, I don't know. I think that with things like these mental health things, it's like it's important to keep that in balance of, you know, okay, fine. You have this mental illness that perhaps makes your brain respond to stimulus in a way that it shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, then you have to fix it. You know, it's like that's something that you have to do.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
It's interesting because Jesus rarely states things unequivocally in a way that like matters to us practically on a day to day. Like, he'll say things like, yeah, don't listen to the Pharisees. They're snakes. It's like, I don't really deal with a lot of Pharisees on my day to day. So
mm-hmm.
don't care. I mean, I do care, but I don't know what that means. But one of the things that he does says that he does say that is extremely relevant is verbatim: do not be anxious about anything. That is the phrase, right?
Yeah.
It's not try not to be anxious about anything. It's not do not be anxious about anything unless you have a good reason to be anxious about it.
Yeah.
Do not be anxious about anything unless you are chemically compulsed. It's do not be anxious about anything. And I think that the reason, the thing that you're talking about, the reason that people reject Christianity in favor of psychology is because psychology doesn't demand anything of them. Mm-hmm. They are able to address their anxiety at their own pace and go as long as they want without ever fixing anything until they feel safe, until they feel comfortable, which is fine. I'm fine with people feeling safe. But like you might die tomorrow, you know? And yeah. So if you like wait forever until you feel safe or until you feel like you've healed from whatever XYZ trauma and you leave your anxiety unresolved, then you are in contradiction to what the Lord has commanded you to. And so I think people just ignore that because it asks something of them and they'd rather subscribe to the religion of psychology or therapy or psychotherapy, whatever the thing is, because it's a lot easier, you know? And then I can hop therapists whenever I want to. I can not go to therapy. Like, it puts everything into your control. Like, I can take my meds when I want to, or I can not take my meds. I can go to therapy, or I can not go to therapy. I can listen to my therapist, or I can not listen to my therapist. Like, you can always find a dissenting opinion about that stuff. Like, you can go online and find people who will say, you're 100% right to keep doing what you're doing. And it's only when you go to scripture and you read the words of Christ that there's no like dissenting opinion. Like you can't, Jesus says, do not be anxious about anything. Okay. Sure. Someone can disagree.
Yeah.
But who are you going to take in the fight? You know,
That's a hard thing to say. You know, you don't want to say that on Twitter publicly. You don't want to say that.
You'll get chased off.
I was like, I haven't been canceled in a while. I gotta find a take to have that's like vaguely.
I could just tweet it right now.
Disabled.
I could just tweet it. I could just say, Jesus said, "Do not be anxious." I will. I'm gonna say, Jesus said, "Do not be anxious about anything." Not be anxious if you have diagnosed anxiety. People would be mad at me.
People would get mad at you. Yeah,
but no, I'm right.
Apparently, the trick is you gotta tweet something that's innocent enough that people are like, "What are you talking about? Why are you so mad about this?" But still, people are like, "That's actually incredibly, ableist of you to say." You should say something like, "Everyone should be legally required to learn how to drive a manual stick shift."
Yeah.
That would be funny because people would be like, "Well, I can't because I don't have all my legs." And it's like, well, then you can't drive.
I think a great take is like, we as a society should have no reason for automatic sliding doors. Like there should always be someone around to open a door for you. You know, like there is as a human society, there should be someone there. If you're in a wheelchair, there should be someone there to open the door for you. Someone should notice and someone should open the door.
I actually kind of agree with that, yeah.
So like the fact that we've replaced courtesy with a button is wrong. But if you tweeted that, right? I would get destroyed.
Dude, I think you should do that. That sounds really great.
A great idea.
That's a great idea.
That could be our whole week next week. It would be that.
You just make these over and over again. Because when you think about it, I mean, think about the sliding glass door. The sliding glass door or the sliding automatic doors, they're never automatic when there's no one in the building. There's someone in the building. Why can't that person in the building open the door for that poor person in that wheelchair? Come on, man.
Right.
Come on. And it's not like you don't know they're coming. They park in the parking spot right in front of the door. You can see out the window. You should know.
Takes them long enough to get to the door.
They should be able to get right in there. Man, I love that. That we should definitely have that post. That should definitely be posted.
But I hear what you're, I agree with what you're saying. I think there's a, there needs to be like a revival of like, there needs to be that there's this intersection that doesn't exist right now in popular Christianity or Catholicism. And it's like total empathy and love and charity towards someone who's experiencing the feelings of anxiety or the chemical imbalance of anxiety or whatever it is, combined with the like radical call to Christian trust in the Lord. Like, I feel like there's not really anybody that has both of those. It's either like you're being a baby and get over it and you just want to live in your woke playground, or it's like everything totally go to therapy. You know, therapy can be a form of church, like that type of thing. It's like, there needs to be, it's both. You don't get a pass just because you went to a guy and the guy wrote on a piece of paper and said, you have this.
My therapist wrote me a note to get out of following the commandments.
The commandments are a note that are you getting out of hell. So you should probably pay attention to that note more so than the other one.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit like what you said earlier, right? Oh. So like Ethan and I were talking before the podcast, and I'm not in this situation. It was a hypothetical situation. I'm not in this situation. I'm fine. But Ethan was like, if you needed $1,000 and the only way you were going to make it work was if I gave you $1,000, I'd give you two. Like, that's Christian charity. It's like, if that was the only thing that would work, I would give you money. But at the same time, if you gave me that money and then I like blew it, or if I gave you that money and then did nothing,
right?
You'd be like, what are you doing? Like, you're wasting this mercy. You're wasting this gift. You would still call me to be like, all right, cool. Now you have to like, you would still push me to get out of that spot.
Right.
You know, stop, we work together. Or whatever, you know?
Well, let's not be too hasty. Let's continue. If we put the 2,000 on red, you get 4,000. I get my 2,000 back, and then you can keep your 2,000.
The casino loses.
Why does everyone just do that? Just gamble your savings until you double it.
People are stupid. Everybody's stupid except us. I think that's the call is like, it's mercy, and then it's go sin no more. It's I understand what you're going through. But you're still like, you still have to hit this bar and like, I'll help you get there. But like, we can't lower the bar. Like, this is where you're supposed to be.
Right.
You're supposed to be a saint. You're supposed to be perfect like Jesus.
This is so messed up. Like, today, this happens all over the place where the bar is just getting lowered. Like in the police, they like change the physical requirements so that women can be cops or like women can be firefighters. I have no problem with women doing things if they can do them.
Yes.
But like, you shouldn't change the standards so that you can just have more women doing the thing.
I would appreciate it if every firefighter could carry 200 pounds.
At least. Yes. I need you to be able to carry me and my collection of valuable comic books.
At the same time.
Leave the wife, get the comic books, come back for her. I don't own any comic books.
Ethan's running at the burning building. No, no, everything I love is in there. Like, sir, we got your wife and your child. I was like, no, the comic books. You don't understand. It's like Mystic River. He's holding back. It's not my comic books in there. Anyway.
Yeah.
No one saw
them. Mint condition, sir. Just because they smelled like mint when you bought them does not mean that they are mint condition.
That's what that means.
But they're changing standards now all over the place. They're changing standards in the education areas, they're changing standards in military and law enforcement, firefighting, all these places where there's previously been standards, especially education. I think for people coming through the school system, and what we were just talking about, that tweet that you were talking about, right? We this guy that we are friends with online, Patrick knows him in real life, and I just know him through Twitter. I think he's way smarter than Patrick, and he tweeted something about how he was at a big tech firm and he was astonished at the number of people that worked there that were incompetent, and simultaneously the small amount of competent people that it truly takes to run a very large organization, and the fact that a lot of places are just bloated with people that don't meet the any type of meritocratic
standard. Has what, like 8 employees, and they're able to run what must be $1 million organization.
Oh, it's an eight-figure business for sure. There's for no sure. way that it's not.
Yeah. And the Temu or whatever, it's like they got like 80,000 employees. How is that mm-hmm. even possible?
Right.
You know? Anyway.
So we see standards falling in all of these other places, and then we just naturally expect that the standard would also fall for Christianity, which it has in some way. Like, mm-hmm. oh, it's okay. The holy day of obligation is on Sunday. You don't have to come during the week. Oh, it's okay. You can just sign these forms. I'm convinced that there are lots of annulments that are granted that should not be granted. You know, there are a lot of people that get confirmed that should not get confirmed. There are a lot of people who get married that should not be allowed to get married. You know, like it can't just be like a sign of the times. Like, oh, it's just because it's the modern day.
I think that might be part of it.
You think so? We're back to the beginning. We joked about this at the beginning of the podcast, that we were a podcast that talks about how difficult it is to be Catholic in the modern times. And now we're genuinely
We're talking about the opposite. We're talking about how easy it is to be Catholic because people have made it so easy to be Catholic. It's right. not really that hard. You know, it's right. it's almost the reverse. You'd be lulled mm-hmm. into the sense of security where you don't actually yeah. nothing is demanded. I mean, this is it's popcorn time, man.
I didn't eat dinner, so I just need a little snack to keep going.
A little snack. But this is, I don't know. Have you ever been in an office where it's clear you don't have to work? It's like people fall yes. to the lowest common denominator, right? Like people just, they rise to the lowest point. It's like water, you know, which is like, I don't want to work. That guy's not working. Why do I have to work? You know, and it's hard to get out of that. Even if you're a genuinely motivated and caring person, you're like, well, we're getting paid the same, and I'm going to pay the same if I do more work. I get paid the same if I'm doing less work. Mm-hmm. And it's like if it's the same with the Catholic world, where it's like, oh, I see everybody at my church. These people are all in good standing. They're well-liked and admired in the church, and they're living this life of sin, or they're doing this thing that I thought was wrong. It's like, I think that happened in my youth ministry growing up, where like a lot of kids noticed that the other kids weren't, there were these well-respected kids in youth group that weren't living it completely. And mm-hmm. so they were like, oh, well, I guess I don't have to do all of these things that right. we're talking about every Sunday. And so they kind of learned that you could go to the lowest, you know, the lowest point. And so the standard wasn't set. And I think I think that's why saints do so well in like converting people. Is because they don't let they somehow don't let the standard go, and right. they keep the standard high, and so people are like, oh wow, that's where it's at. And some people react and be like, I could never do that, but other people are encouraged and inspired by that, and be like, oh wow, if he can do it because he's a goofball, so can I, which is good, which is why I think I should become a saint, because people will look at me and go, Pat's a goofball, and he was able to do it, so why can't I?
We were on a phone call today, and someone called us A+. And that's stuck with me all day.
We tricked him. Absolutely tricked him.
We did.
We got him. He yeah. called for us, hook, line, and sinker. Someone referred to us as like a group of A+. He's like, I like working with people who are, you know, on the road to greatness. And I was like, must be a long road.
Interesting. Yes.
We've been where we are for a long time, it feels like.
I know. We are stagnant.
We're not stagnant. Boy.
No, we're growing.
We're moving. But
slowly. And that has affected me because I'm like, man, is that just a perception thing? Is there some truth to it? Obviously, I know that I have value. This is not a poor me thing, but it's like that desire for sainthood is there. And I know people look up to us, obviously, or else you wouldn't listen to our show. Like there's some level of like people like
there's
to hear
some
what
level
we have
of you
to
like
say.
Us, yeah.
Right. And so it's a strange feeling to then like go about your whole life and then have this feeling of like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I've let the standard go down in a lot of places, but I mean, okay. Who hasn't, you know? So it's just a strange feeling.
That's how Thomas Aquinas, this is how Thomas Aquinas interprets the parable of not the parable,
who?
The event.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Ethan, I'm upset with you.
What did I do?
You got a free book in the mail, and then you read me the back of it, and I wanted to read it, but I don't have it.
Oh, just another way that I'm smarter than you and have more books.
Thank you. We have a sponsor. We have an author sponsored our podcast. A friend of Ethan wrote a book.
His name is Alec Molly, and his book, Out of Suns, you can find it on Amazon.com. Look up Out of Suns by Alec Molly. And I did get it in the mail, and you didn't. And I think that's just because intuitively people know that I read and you don't.
That is the reputation probably that I've developed for myself as someone who doesn't read. Ew, yucky.
Yeah, and you definitely don't read books about two brothers that are going across the country together and wrestling with their faith in God and growing in friendship all because of a woman. That's not the type of thing that you...
You read the back cover, and I am a sucker for these kinds of, like, journey to a destination and, like, a subversion of the expectation. Yeah, sort of. Yeah, like a big transformative experience. You read that to me, and I was like, I love it. Also, I love stories about love, not working out. And guys, it's good.
This is a story written by a young man trying to deal with the modern world for young men. Like, he's told me this is the book that he wished he would have had when he was in college, getting ready to marry his wife and all of these things going into grad school. So read Out of Suns. It's aimed at the boys, but I think the ladies could also benefit a lot from this book. If you got a boy in your life, go to Amazon.com, look up Out of Suns by Alec Molly, buy it. And there's no way to tell him that we sent you, but I think he will know because there's tons of orders coming in because you're all going to buy it. Patrick.
He'll know in his heart.
Yes. And maybe one day you'll learn how to read.
Thanks, back Alec Molly. That's M-A-L-L-Y.
M-A-L-Y.
M-A-L-Y.
E-C-M-A-L-Y.
Yes. Look up Alec Molly on Amazon. Thank you, Alec, for sponsoring this episode of The Crunch.
Back to the episode.
Thomas Aquinas, he has this thing where he talks about the water into wine. And when the guy says most serve the good wine first and save an inferior one for later, he says that most Christians do that when they convert. They give the good wine first and then they save the inferior one for later. When everyone is drunk freely and is intoxicated by their by their perfection, that's what we all do, right?
That's what we did. We started a podcast when we were young, we were on fire, and we were reading books, you're still reading books, but like we were talking about theology, we were doing ministry, we were doing all these things. Everyone's like, look at these guys, podcast guys, cool guys, ministry guys. And now sales, marketing, mortgage.
We suck.
Just having a family? Like I don't know.
I went from people like loving to hear me on their phones to people hanging up on me on their phones and calling me a...
People do that. People they do, call
they
you
do
that.
That, man. That's crazy.
They do call you that, man.
Bleep that part out. Sorry.
Yeah.
it happened recently.
It's just a strange dichotomy, I suppose, between desiring to be that A-plus player, the saint, you know, the guy who doesn't let the standard down, the desire to evangelize, and the reality of, like, I get up and I work and I try to hang out with my family at night, and I try to hang out with my wife after the kid goes to bed, and then I go to sleep, and I get up and I do it again. It's like, man, is that really that inspiring of an existence? I guess.
What is Jose Maria Escriba? I've been reading some Jose Maria Escriba.
Who?
Escriba. Jose Maria Escriva. He was a...
He's the guy that's mean in his book.
Really? Is that what you get?
I mean, I read it and he's like, man up, go to the bathroom. Why are you holding all that pee in your bladder? Stupid idiot. That's like what all of his little lines read like to me. When I read
they're great. Yeah. So I'm reading his homilies, and so
you have gone a full day without pooping? This is not becoming of a Christian man. Poop regularly. That's what all of the little things in the way sound like.
Dude, you're so right. All the little dude, but I read that book and I was like, yeah. this man was tweeting. Homie was tweeting.
I think
in 1973.
He was. But a lot of old books were like that. We don't realize. Like a lot of old people were just like, they just collect. Like Marcus Aurelius, Meditations by Marcus Aurelius is just tweets. It's just Roman tweets.
Man was tweeting.
Tweetus Aurelius.
Marcus Aurelius.
Marcus Aurelius.
But I like his homilies a lot better because they're much more prosaic. But I picked up at YCP, I picked up his a tiny little book about this big of 18 homilies of his I've been working through.
Oh, cool.
I'm like, oh, this is so good. It's like
nice.
It's just very, you know, affirming of the state of life that I'm in. And also that because when I was learning the standards, the one thing is I don't think the standards have fallen for us. And maybe other people have felt this too, but it's like the situation has changed, so we're unsure of what the standards are.
Right.
Like going from being in youth group to being in campus ministry to, for us, being in full-time ministry, the standards, and being single, the standards were like, they were very specific things. Like you should be praying every day for, you should probably be praying every day for an hour because you have the time. You should be going to daily mass. You should be, you know, you should probably be engaged in some kind of like extracurricular faith thing with your friends. And now it's like, that's not really the standard anymore because like we need to be spending time with our family. And so now the standard
my
is like,
son needs me to throw him onto the bed after he jumps off. And then I catch
Leo,
him and I throw him back onto the bed.
Leo has pooped on his hand and he, I check the monitor. He's fine. I hear, and he's like, and I go in, I'm like, oh buddy, what'd you do? And he's like, anyway, so the standard is now doing things like that, doing the duties of my, doing my daily duties, with love and with diligence and like avoiding things like distracting myself while I do them, or, you know, avoiding thinking about God during the day. You know, there's little things like that. So the standards are just different. And so reading Opus Dei stuff has been helpful because it's like they all had jobs and they just did them and loved God, you know?
I would like some Opus Dei stuff.
Yeah,
can
you
give
me
that. Can you give me that book that you got?
I'll be, I'll send it to you.
All right, cool.
I hear an echo of myself. Do you hear an echo of me?
Yeah, I'm quietly, I'm using my guttural throat to repeat exactly in your same tone back to you what I'm hearing from you.
It's a faint echo. Maybe your headphones are just too loud.
Are my headphones too loud? I'll turn them down. Speak now.
Like Taylor Swift.
Taylor.
Yeah, I can barely. Taylor Swift. Well, that was helpful. Standards, yeah. Practices, S&Ps.
Brandon Standardson.
Brandon Standardson. There we go. G-Wagon. Brandon Standardson's G-Wagon in heaven. There we go.
Brandon Standardson's God Wagon. Except he believes that God is not Trinitarian, which is unfortunate.
He's a Mormon.
Yeah. We should pray for his conversion so that we can talk to him about magic in heaven.
I almost made a joke about the end of the Mistborn saga that would have spoiled it for you about
please
Mormonism.
Don't
so I'm
please
glad
don't.
That I didn't make that joke.
Please do not. I am one day I'll figure out what the deepness is. I'll get there.
You'll figure
I'm
it out.
Grinding. I'm hustling. I have enjoyed it way more because it's now this book is much more like it's kind of like a political drama now. But whereas before it was like I'm a young girl and I don't know what's going on. Please woof me. Which is fine because there was magic in it and it was cool and there was action. But I wish Kelsier was the main character of the first book, honestly.
He kind of
and
was.
Then he wasn't because it was all from the perspective of Vin. So I wish Kelsier was the what we were with him the whole time. And then
it
I wish that it switched
him,
it did start with him, but then you don't know his plan, you don't know what he's trying to do, like a lot of his stuff is kept hidden, you know. And then I wish it would switch to Vin after he dies. Spoilers, I guess. You know, so I don't know. Anyway, I think it's fine.
Read Mistborn. It's good.
I'm enjoying myself, contrary to popular belief. Brandon Sanderson, I've been thinking about this. He's like, the way I read him, and I'm like, man, I'm really enjoying this. And I like, it's, he writes a page turner. He knows how to write a page turner. But I like don't want to like it when I'm reading it because I know it's slop. You know what I mean?
It's not slop.
But it's not slop. It's good. It's no, good. It's good.
You called it, you said it was a 7 out of 10. Like, so like Brandon right. writes a 7 out of 10. I don't think that's necessarily true. I think he might be writing some of the best fantasy that's out there.
Ever?
That's no, I think he might be like current, you know?
Jordan Robert Rowling's fans are turning in their grave and now.
I mean, I think compared to what Mistborn was and compared to what I've seen from Stormlight, I think Harry Potter is a 7 out of 10 on that scale.
True. If you've ever read any like pulp fantasy from the like 80s and 90s, you know how much of it is just like, it's just schlock. It's just like big-breasted women, like, and everybody is just trying to win. Like, it's not really anything complicated. It's like a very basic story, and it's like anime. It's like anime for white guys before there was anime for white guys. Do you know what I'm saying?
Jack Reacher is a 7 out of 10 slop book. Like, that's true. That's not even true. He's more a 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
But, you know, those pulpy, the author puts out a book a year books are 5 to 7s. I think this guy writes art. Like, he does. He has a craft that he's very good at. It's hard to write a page turner without resorting to like gimmicks, you know.
But I also think like
I wonder if these characters are gonna touch each other. I wonder,
just get to this next page now, please. But I think J.K. Rowling writes a page turner. Like, I think Harry Potter is genuinely a page turner. You know, like people can't put it down. They love reading it, so I think that's worth something. You know,
I think, fair. I retract what I said. Jack Reacher pulp stuff 5 out of 10. Harry Potter 7. Mistborn 9.
What's a 10 out of 10 for you in terms of fiction in this genre?
I don't think there can be a 10.
That's such a stupid answer.
I know. I don't know. I don't know what a 10 would be.
You think The Lord of the Rings is a 10?
I don't like it. I just never got into
crazy.
It.
Crazy.
They lost me at Tom Bombadil. I got to tell you.
That's so early.
Oh, wait, is that not in Two Towers? I don't care. I don't remember. I read Fellowship.
You're making so many people mad right now.
I'm sorry, everybody.
Yeah. I like it when Gandalf and Tom Bombadil sat down and they had tea with Sauron at the Isengard. It was great, man. It was a fun time.
When I finished the third Mistborn book, I was like, that was the most satisfying ending. I think that might have been the best series I've ever read. Like, it was incredible. It was so good.
Let's walk it back. Have you actually read The Lord of the Rings, like as an adult?
Yeah, I tried as an adult.
And you only made it. Did you even finish Fellowship?
I finished Fellowship. I made it halfway through Two Towers.
Okay, and then you stopped when it switched to Sam and Frodo from Pippin and Merry, probably, because that's where everybody stops.
I guess.
I think I would argue, because I read The Lord of the Rings within the last 5 years, like as an adult. And I do believe that The Return of the King is the most satisfying ending to a trilogy.
Really?
Like, okay. I'm excited for Mistborn. I'm enjoying it, you know, whatever. But I think you would really, really appreciate, like, I was reading it and I was like aware of how good it was when I was reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was something to it, especially like the deeper you get into Return of the King, you're just like, things are just hitting and you're like, this makes so much sense. And you like feel the language. It's really, really hard to describe without sounding like an absolute freaking loser. But which is how most people sound when you talk about, spoiler alert, for those of you who talk about Lord of the Rings all the time, you sound like losers. Figure out a better way to talk about it. I don't care.
It is one of those things where you feel like you should be able to reference it the way that people would reference Greek mythology, the way that Dante references Greek mythology.
It really is mythology in a certain sense.
Yes.
Like, it's written that way.
Tolkien cut his teeth reading Beowulf. You know?
I think you should maybe, I don't know. I don't know when you'll have enough time to read it. But if you do pick up a book, I would encourage you to get get through two towers. It's the shortest one. It's also the hardest one to get through. And if you can get through two towers and you can make it to Return of the King, it's worth it. Okay. 100%. I will say
this. I'll do my best.
I'm not, usually I don't stick up for the nerds. Usually I'm like a sports guy, you know?
Yeah. I will say that I think if anything has the the thing about the 10 out of 10 is it has to be enduring, you know? It has to be that Lord of the Rings. It has entered the Western canon, you know?
Right.
It's like Mistborn hits, yeah. But that might just be a cultural thing. It might be because it's pop culture and I like pop culture, you know?
Before I had a child, I was doing a lot of Dostoevsky, which was enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember reading Crime and Punishment, like, right when I got married, you know? And it was like, mm-hmm. I was like, man, this is great. Like, I was really enjoying myself. Mm-hmm. And I haven't touched a piece of... The reason I picked up Mistborn is because I was like, nothing sounds interesting. I don't want to read a single book. I just want to read something that will keep me engaged. And I remembered you saying that I should read it. And I was like, I'll probably pick it up. And it's been wonderful.
Discworld, 7 out of 10, like Harry Potter style.
Oh, I've never read Discworld. Terry Pratchett recently died within the last couple of years.
He did. Discworld, solid. Fun.
Is it sci-fi or is it fantasy?
It's fantasy. It's not. Okay. It's like it's about a world that's the shape of a disc. It's on the back of four.
Say
elephants.
No more. I'm in.
It's on the back of four elephants that are standing on the back of a flying turtle.
Oh, it's one of those. It's the Hank Green of fantasy books.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah, Terry Pratchett, absolute heathen, definitely an atheist. Sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Gosh. That's the problem.
Dude, I can't tell you how much... If I saw Hank Green, I would sleep him.
Did you know that John Green, the guy that I hated for a long time, is like a devout Catholic now?
Wait, really?
Yes, dude.
No way! Yes. That's not true.
Yes. I'm pretty sure he's a devout Catholic. I think he's Catholic. But I know for a fact he's a Christian.
Dude. Hank Green was on The Yard recently and I listened to it and I was just like, this guy just thinks science is so cool and it's not. It just made me so mad. But if his brother's a practicing Catholic, it changes everything.
I know it does. Default our stars FAQ. Do you, as a Christian, if you're a Christian, why did you write The Fault in Our Stars? It's such a naturalistic secular worldview. Yeah. Thank you.
It's a great question.
No, hold on, okay. It's just saying that he's a Christian. Is John Green Catholic? It just says Christian. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's not Catholic. I remember him saying something about.
Where did you hear that?
There's something about him like loving the Eucharist or something. Wikipedia. What's his religion? Show me the religion. Someone's screaming at their phone right now.
He's Episcopalian.
Oh, that's why he was talking about the Eucharist then.
Yeah.
Because
then you can believe in God, but in the version that is acceptable to left-wing people.
Yeah, I will say, like, okay, so he has been a priest, or sorry, not a priest. He wanted to be a priest. So he's been a Catholic or an Episcopalian Christian for years, and he's been devout, and he did that, and he wrote a book called Looking for Alaska that I think is softcore porn for children. So that's a problem.
No offense to our Episcopalian listeners, but it tracks.
Bro. Sorry.
I do not like
talking to Episcopalians. They're like, oh, we're like Catholic light. I'm like, shut up. Stolen valor. You don't get to see.
Next time someone says that, be like, oh, so you're a pedophile, but the light version? Interesting.
Nice.
So you dog our own religion. You dog our own religion, and then you dog them, and then they're like, they don't know what to do. You take their wallet and you run away.
Dude, I had the funniest clapback at someone on the internet, but it's not cool to talk about that publicly, so I'll tell you after the podcast.
Oh,
and if
maybe
you want to
people
know,
should
go to the
patreon.com/thecrunch
and you can find out in the Patreon Discord.
Patrick will tell us what what demonic truths he unleashed on
Twitter. No, dude, I got someone. It was they set me up for it.
Oh,
they set me up for it.
The perfect alley-oop. Have you seen the play? The Dallas Mavericks this year had the best, probably one of the greatest basketball plays I've ever seen. It was like this. Luka Doncic steals the ball. He falls to the ground. He throws the ball up to Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving lobs the ball up to Derek Jones Jr., and he slams it. It's just a wonderful basketball play. That's what I'm imagining for you.
That is what happened.
It's just the whole stadium erupting. You can see Mark Cuban in the background going in slow motion. That's you huge, when you tweet.
Huge. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm Mark Cuban. You're Derek.
When you're mean to me on Twitter, this is who you're mean to.
This is a great episode. I love talking to you about stuff, man. Patreon.com/TheCrunch. That's the place where you can support us. We are currently in a campaign to go from 115 patrons to 200 patrons. That's 85 more patrons. Okay. There are thousands of people that listen to this podcast. All right. And if you're listening to this, you could be one of the 85.
Oh, okay.
It would really, really help us continue to grow the show, to get to where we're going, to do some more cool stuff. We have a lot of plans. We're in the midst of a lot of change and transition, as always. With two kids coming up, we're just trying to bolster the show to make it to help us weather the storm of having four children amongst the two of us. Mm. So patreon.com/thecrunch, $10 a month and up gets you a bonus episode. 200 patrons. If you get there, we're going to have a big prize, a big reward for everyone. And it will tell you what it is soon, but it's going to be a big reward. Don't shake your head. If we get to 200 patrons, will you do a big reward with me?
Oh yeah. I'll do a huge reward.
We should go to Times Square. And then we do a live podcast from Times
We should go
Square.
Back to Heathrow.
If we get to 200 patrons, I'm telling you this right now, Patrick and I fly to London. Okay. We go to Big Benjamin and we hit the vape. We hit the Benjamin at the Benjamin. Imagine.
Imagine. Well, we went 15 minutes over, but
we did. This was a long one.
People like the long podcast. Yes. Go to patreon.com/thecrunch, bit.ly/crunchdiscord. Ethan.
Patrick, do you have anything else for the people?
Dropped a green bean on...
I dropped a green bean on my iPad.
I'm John Lennon, the leader of the Beatles.
That's pretty good.
Thanks.
I'm Paul McCartney. I'm the leader of the Beatles. We're from Liverpool.
Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us while we pray for you. We'll see you all next week.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.